The big story this morning in all the papers is about what happened in court yesterday. Again, we're back to the courts. We're coming home. I'm looking at the front page of the Irish Independent, and it's all about the Collins Dundon story. Collins family free to return after two are jailed for murder of Roy. Wayne Dundon was willing to pay €500,000 for another hit before trial. 12 members of notorious crime gang now serving life in prison. Why don't we cut through it all? Because it is quite hard, if you're busy and the busy lives we lead, to try and make sense of it all. All the papers covering it, all with different angles. Let's go to the man who has the story probably in the greatest detail today, because he has an exclusive interview on page four, largely, of the Irish Independent this morning. And that is Paul Williams, who is with the Irish Independent. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Ryan.
Let's take this from the beginning, Paul. I think that'd be the easiest thing to do. Yeah. And I think for that reason, with that in mind, let's go back to, I think it's 2004, and the entrance to a pub at which Steve Collins' adopted son, Ryan, was working that night.
Yeah, and in its banality and its ordinariness, and it is so utterly and absolutely innocuous. What happened here was, and this basically tells the whole story of Wayne Dundon and these people, and the kind of visceral badness that is in them, so profoundly malevolent individuals. He comes to the door at 9:30. It's 9:25. It's actually on the CCTV on the December 19th, 2004. Ryan Lee, who is the adopted son of Steve and Carma Collins, a wonderful man. Thank God he survived, but he had lost it. Just as a background, people don't realize it, but the young Ryan, as a three-year-old, his mother died, and then when he was 13, his father died, and he was adopted by Steve and Carmel. But he's working in the pub for his stepdad, getting a few bob for Christmas. He's standing at the door. This is a pub called Brannigan's. It was a fine, big premises. You may have seen it, Ryan, if you were ever down there. It was a big, fine pub. And very well run. Basically, he stands at the door. It's 9:25. New laws have just been enacted in the state, which made it, if you recall, for children under a certain age, cannot be on a premises, a licensed premises, after a certain period of time, at 9 o'clock. It's a very strict law, and it was just after being introduced. But Ryan is standing there, and Anne Casey, Wayne Dundon's wife, walks up to the door with a 14-year-old. He says, very, very obviously, he thought she was 12, Annabelle Dundon, and he says, "You can't get in, and have you got ID?" And she says, "Of course I have ID," and then she can't produce ID, and then Wayne Dundon gets out of his car, comes over, so what's going on here? And Ryan, who's a very inoffensive young fella, said, "Look, I'm sorry about this," and of course he can recognise Dundon, because everybody in Limerick knew what Dundon looked like, and he said, "Look, I can't, because the police come in, we're in trouble." So he says, "F you, you're going to get it." He makes a shine of a gun with his fingers. This is 9:25. He walks out of the pub. He storms off Dundon with his sister in tow. And he disappears. And 25 minutes later, a gunman matching the exact same description, the physical description of Mr. Dundon, walked into the bar, but not only down into the lounge at Brannigan's. And if I can just describe it, it's a long bar. He walked all the way down the length of the bar. So he obviously knew the premises. He walked in behind the counter, you know the way a bar would stretch down the premises, away from the front door. He walked up, looking into the faces of each member staff, with this helmet on, motorbike helmet, and he walked into the front bar, and Ryan is there with his back to him, standing pulling a pint, and he comes down and just shoots him in the leg. Ryan goes down. He tries to get out, then the front door was permanently locked, and he tried to get out of the old bar. Dundon, he came back, and then he's on his way back. He does, for good measure, he says, I'll shoot him again. Now, we believe that he was actually intent on killing Ryan at that stage. He fired another shot into Ryan, and Ryan had to spend months in hospital and had his knee rebuilt. So, he leaves. So, basically, the guards arrive and say, what happened? He says, this man threatened to kill me 25 minutes later. So, they look at the CCTV and they said, that's Wayne Dundon. So, Steve, at that stage, took the decision on Ryan, because they're very decent, upstanding citizens, and they decided that they would make a complaint and they would stand over it. Because remember, at this stage in Limerick in 2004, these guys are in the space of 3 years of a war going on down there. The body count was rising by the month. They were killing innocent people, left, right and centre, particularly Brian Fitzgerald, a bouncer in a nightclub down there, who wouldn't let them sell the drugs, so they came along and killed them. It was a big decision, and a lot of people were walking away. There was a lot of intimidation. There was a lot of controversy subsequently to that, where jurors were being, the reckoning being got at. And it was very, very difficult to put these people away. But Steve stood his ground. But then, as a result of standing his ground, between that and the trial date in April of 2005, he got a letter. And I actually, if I should have the copy of the letter to read to you because it's extraordinary, but I don't have it. But basically, what this letter said, you know, Steve, if you go to court, we're going to get you. And you, as you can see, all the people who are dying around the place, you should be able to look at their cases and realise that we can come and kill you anytime we want. Steve still got up in the box and gave evidence, so did Ryan. Dunlan got 10 years, and as we now know, Garrett Collins, one of his accomplices, another criminal in the gang, said that that day he came in, he swore that he would kill Steve Collins. Subsequent to that, then, about a month later, they burned down Brannigan's pub. Brannigan's, as I said to you earlier, was a big, fine premises. That pub has never reopened. Because what they did here was, so then he had another pub called the Steering Wheel. What they did was, they destroyed one pub. And of course, the Great Irish State, and this is one of the stories that has gone untold so far, and I think the public need to know, is that only for Steve being so vociferous and so articulate and so eloquent, he would have been buried by the state. They would have left him. The insurance companies wouldn't pay for to compensate his pub. The banks wouldn't lend him money. He was treated appallingly. So he is driven to going from a situation of having a good business to near penury over a number of years. And that was the consequence of the Dunlans. They burned down his premises. He couldn't reopen. The state didn't help him. They undermined his other business, the Steering Wheel, because it's in working class South Hill. It's about 1 kilometre as the crow flies from the middle of McCarthy Dunlan land, or the Dunlan land, which is in Ballinacore, Westham. So they were intimidating customers. So Steve Collins, in all those years, had to try and scrimp and save and get on with it and try and look after his family.
Okay.
Bring it on then. Nothing is heard again until October of 2008.
All right, 4 years later.
4 years later. A note is sent out. It's a coded note. It's a crudely written, handwritten line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 75K pitchfork. Pitchfork is pitchfork. Johnny McNamara, a drug dealer down there, who they were trying to kill for years.
Okay.
And the next one was, basically the code was 75K to shoot Steve Collins. And it was SCBLKJP, as in black Jeep, in the morning. As in preferably in the morning. He comes in, he was normally escorted in by the guards, he comes in to open the premises around 7:50, kill him when he comes in. So, contrary to what the public had been told, it wasn't the police found this, it was Steve was presented with this by somebody, an informant within the gang, who said, look, these guys are crazy, they're out of control, I don't know, this is a decent man, we don't want to see him killed.
So that sounds like it constitutes a gangland contract.
This was gangland contract.
Yeah.
75K to shoot each, 150,000 of an investment.
Okay, and Steve Collins, who meanwhile was under guard of protection,
he was under guard of protection in the morning. So he brings this to the guards. The guards then step up their protection on him, just driving in him, escorting him in and out from work every morning.
Yeah.
And then what happened, which proved that this note was accurate.
Yes.
Was that they then sent out Barry Doyle, John Dunlan did, to kill Pitchfork McNamara, Johnny McNamara. And that's when they shot dead in Shane Gagan in November 2008. A totally innocent man.
A rugby player as you say, an innocent man who's caught up in the middle of all this
madness. He was just walking home, Ryan, and they went after him. Barry Doyle, this is how these guys operated. The indiscriminate, casual nature of their violence is incredible.
So let's get on to the cruel and awful business then of Roy Collins.
Well, then on Holy Thursday of 2009, he's got a little place called The Coin. It's a little arcade.
Yeah.
It was next door to Steering Wheel. His dad opened up at 10 tasers normally. Roy came in around 11, had a chat with his dad. So the next day was Good Friday, so he was going to go up to Belfast to buy a kitchen for... He just was finishing off a lovely new home he had built for himself in Killaloe. And he was going, he saw a bargain for a kitchen. He was telling the dad, I'm going to go up there tomorrow and buy it, and we might put it in, and it's great. And he goes into his premises, and then around 12 o'clock, one of the staff comes in to Steve and says, look, there's somebody after being hurt or injured in the arcade next door. Steve runs in, and there's his son on his hunkers, gasping for breath, saying, Dad, somebody shot me. And his dad sees all the blood, the bullet went right through, and tries to comfort his son. Then he is taken away by ambulance and he dies. He died of a heart attack then in hospital, a very, very short period after that. And that's when the public, I think that was the seminal moment. That was two men, innocent men. Now, there have been other, many other innocent men, and in fact, what makes Limerick different to everywhere else and unique is that they butchered innocent people left, right and centre. Dublin criminals won't do that. Mm-hmm. And Steve then became, I suppose, for all intents and purposes, an accidental hero because, as I said, he's so articulate and eloquent. He stood up and he said, I'm not taking this. And it was his way of dealing with the pain. And he then, 1 month, on Roy's month's mind mass, he organised a march, which I was there that day, and people say the figures officially were around 5,000. I think it was about 7,000 people there that day. Everybody wore red. They walked through the centre. It was a very dignified, silent march they walked through, and it was basically people's way of saying, look, we've had enough of this. And a lot more, as Willie O'Dea, who was a very good friend of Steve, said, you know, there are thousands more people want to be here, but they're terrified. And a lot of people said that day. But it was the first moment when they stood up. And then Dermot Ahern, who was then the Justice Minister, again, was very, very moved by the plight of Steve. He introduced very dramatic, and some people, well, fluffy liberals would say it was draconian legislation. It wasn't. It was a proportionate response to a major crisis that was going on. And he brought in these laws, anti-gang legislation. Mm-hmm. And Steve always sees that as part of Roy's legacy. One aspect of it, ironically, for our friends who are this morning getting ready to spend the rest of their lives behind bars, is that a provision was made that major gangland cases from henceforth will be heard in the special criminal court to avoid juries being tampered with. And in fact, that's where the two boys were dealt with yesterday.
Okay, so what we saw then yesterday, which was, you know, you have to get justice, that is all you have left, was the proclamation from Steve Collins and his family. But what we saw then was that Wayne Dundon was found guilty of ordering this hit, as they say, from prison. And then Nathan Killeen was done for driving the car, is that right?
That's right, and Nathan actually organised the logistics because they went first to Garrett Collins, another one of their men, their gangsters, who since turned state witness against them, and they wanted him to drive the car. They said, we're going up just, and this is how they said it, look, we're just going up, it'll only be 5 minutes job. We're going to drive up, whack Steve Collins, be back. He'll be back in 5 minutes, 20 grand for you.
Okay, job done.
That's how they said that. He said, I'm not doing it. Then they got this young lad who's a drug addict called James Dillon, and he is 24 years of age, never shot anyone. He was essentially typical of the type of individual these people use, young kids. Lure them in, get them involved in drugs, make them do whatever you want. Yeah.
So they were essentially preyed upon themselves.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it was...
There are no winners here.
The comparisons to paedophiles, these guys...
Are groomed.
Groomed them. You know, there were kids as young as 10 transporting guns around the place, right, for these people. So, there was fellas being arrested. Like, in 1 year, there was 100... In 2007, at the peak, there was 103 shooting incidents alone in Limerick, which accounted for proportionately... there was 147 in Dublin, a city with 14 times more population.
Yeah, well, that's
and a lot of the people being arrested were 14, 15, 16 years of age.
And what sort of hope do they have in that environment?
None.
Dundon was ready to pay, says the headline there, under this is Barry Duggan's byline, was ready to pay $500,000 to have another Collins killed. From what I understand reading the papers this morning, that figure was 200 and it went to 5 when the criminal fraternity, so-called, weren't interested in taking that check. Why not?
Well, you know, there is a degree of pragmatism amongst criminals, and you know, there is a survival instinct. That is how they live because that's their code. But you know, there are murders that you should not and will not commit. Like, remember when Veronica Guerin was murdered? Nobody could believe that Gilligan organised that or could do that because it was a step across the line.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus. Because remember, what does a criminal do? A criminal tries to make money from committing crime, but he likes to do it as surreptitiously as possible. You don't set up a shop in the high street and say, how are you doing? This is Crime Inc. Limited. We're going to be running a crime business from here. You keep your head down. So what these guys did, and what made them different, and what made them the most dangerous criminal gang that in 30 years of covering organised crime, these guys are number one. It was their indiscriminate, casual violence. It was also this kind of visceral, incomprehensible hatred. You know, Wayne Dundon, I was looking at him yesterday in the court again. There is something absolutely purely evil about his eyes. He's a purely cold, feral creature.
Well, you see, I'm looking at a picture of him here in your paper this morning, and I don't see that because you saw him in cold blood, if you like, in the flesh. I'm looking at him here, and it looks like bar the handcuffs and the copy of what looks like the star in his hand, he looks like a fellow who's just come out of the gym.
Yeah. But I'd say that picture has taken quite a while. I haven't seen the paper yet. But okay. No,
it was pictured in 2013, so he might have changed.
First time I ever encountered Wayne Dundon, and that was the first thing. It was the way he looked at you. And I remember my colleague, Parker Riley, took a picture. We were working in the Sunday World at the time, and he took this picture. And a picture can tell a thousand words. And whatever way the camera, just he found the camera into the centre of the lens, and it was just those cold, dead eyes, and what they did to their own people. And of course,
he doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't take drugs.
No, he just kills people and inflicts pain. That's what he likes to do. In the end, you see, what did them down and did for them was that their violence was such, and their reputation for violence, because the one time these guys made a promise, the only promise that you could say that these were, the one time they were honest about anything, was when they said they're going to kill you. And they would stick by that, and that would become, and somebody would be killed if they didn't kill for them. And that, in the end, they terrorized their own people.
Yeah.
And that, in the end, was the reason why April Collins and her mother and her sister and her brother and also the Dundon's first cousins, Christopher McCarty and Anthony Noddy McCarty, and Noddy is doing life for the murder of Kieran King, they all turned against them because they said, they started threatening their own people, and they said, we know these guys can threaten, they will carry. But also what they realized was these guys will continue their manic, mad campaign of violence and crime. And a lot of them, the vast majority of them, were being locked up. So a lot of these guys had lost their liberty for 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 years, and some of them for life imprisonment. There's 11 members of that gang now doing life imprisonment for murder, by the way. But these guys were finding themselves being sent to prison purely because they were doing what these other psychopaths were telling them to do. And they turned against them. And that's why what proved to be their Achilles heel, their undoing.
Their undoing. And it's like, it is like a bloody movie where you just see the guy turning state evidence or what have you. Wayne Dundon, he's 36 years old. He's now in prison for how long, would you say?
He was in prison, well, to put it in perspective, he came back from the UK in 2000. He had done time in the UK for beating up old people, as one does when he was about 16, 17. He got time there. He was deported from the UK then. So between that and 2004, he had been in prison, I would say, at least half that time. So then when he was arrested, by the way, for attacking Ryan Lee, he was put in custody and not let out. But when he was being questioned by two Gardaí, he jumped on them and broke one of their jaws.
Yeah.
And he was in custody from that until he came out in 2010, and he was out of prison for 1 year.
How long do you think he'll be in from here on in?
I would say that there is an unwritten rule. You know, they say, what is life, and is 7 years life? The state does have a degree of discretion in these things. If these people, like there was one famous warning, a very important warning that they never heeded, and that was from Mr. Justice Paul Carney in 2004. When he convicted or sentenced the five men who were involved, that were convicted and given life for the murder of Kieran King, they were all members of the McCarthy Dundas. And he said, look, they were all standing around the court, goading each other and taunting each other and threatening each other and laughing at the judge. And he said, you know what, guys? The reality here, the cold reality, is that these people, you people, will die in prison unless somebody does something about this violence, because a parole board will have a look at the case and say, well, okay, where is the violence in Limerick now? Who caused it? They will have to look at all those issues. The Gardaí will have a big say in it. So the bottom line is, I don't think Wayne Dundon will be, I'd say by the time he's due for his pension, he might be getting out.
That'll do us for now. Paul, thank you so much for that. Appreciate
Very
you
well.
Telling the story so well this morning. And that is Paul Williams of the Irish Independent. I think that it was worth giving Paul the time. We wouldn't normally take that time, but I just think it is such a seminal moment in crime and crime fighting in Ireland. I think it's also worth noting the incredible work of the Gardaí in this one, and detectives and on the ground locally, and I would imagine nationally and to an extent internationally. And one would hope that this is a good day for Limerick. Limerick City, in general, that this awful scourge on that beautiful city has been lifted and hopefully removed, because it's not, simply not fair. One can only live in hope. If you want to see an interview with Roy Collins by Paul Williams. You can head to independent.ie. It's there. It's very comprehensively covered, in fairness to all the papers this morning, but it's just Paul has the interview there if you want to look at that or indeed read it. And so thanks to Paul Williams for that.